So, of course, I didn't have any date, date tonight. Everybody knows that. My calendar's on the web, right? The problem is that problem, right? It is that problem. Our calendar's on the web. Our location's on the web. You have a cell phone and you have a cell phone network provider, and if your cell phone network provider is Sprint, then we can tell you that several million times last year somebody who has a law enforcement ID card in his pocket somewhere went to the Sprint website and asked for the real-time location of somebody with a telephone number and was given it. Several million times. Just like that. We know that because Sprint admits that they have a website where anybody with a law enforcement ID can go and find the real-time location of anybody with a Sprint cell phone. And we don't know that about AT&T and Verizon because they haven't told us. But that's the only reason we don't know, right? Because they haven't told us. That's a service that you think of as a traditional service, telephony. But the deal that you get with the traditional service called telephony now includes a thing you didn't know, like spying. It's not a service to you, but it's a service. And you get it for free with your service contract for telephony. Right? You get for free the service of advertising with your Gmail, which means, of course, there's another service behind, which is untouched by human hands, semantic analysis of your email. I still don't understand why anybody wants that. I still don't understand why anybody uses it, but the people do, including the very sophisticated and thoughtful people in this room. And you get free email service and some storage, which is worth exactly a penny and a half at the current price of storage. And you get spying all the time. And for free, too. And your calendar's on the web, and everybody can see whether you have a date Friday night, and you have a status, single, looking. And you get a service for free, advertising, single, looking, and spying with it for free. And it all sort of just grewed up that way, right? In the blink of an eye, and here we are. Thank you. And the idea that the network was a network of peers was hard to perceive after a while, particularly if you were, let us say, ordinary human being, that is, not a computer engineer, scientist, or researcher, not a hacker, not a geek. If you were an ordinary human being, it was hard to perceive that the underlying architecture of the net was meant to be about peerage, because the operating system software with which you interacted very strongly instantiated the idea of the server and client architecture. In fact, of course, if you think about it, it was even worse than that. The thing called Windows was a degenerate version of a thing called X Windows. It too thought about the world in a server-client architecture, but what we would now think of as backwards. The server was the thing at the human being's end, remember? That was the basic X Windows conception of the world. It served communications with human beings at the endpoints of the net to processes located at arbitrary places near the center, in the middle, or at the edge of the net. It was the great idea of Windows, in an odd way, to create a political archetype in the net which reduced the human being to the client and produced a big centralized computer, which we might have called a server, which now provided things to the human being on take-it-or-leave-it terms. They were, of course, quite take-it-or-leave-it terms. And unfortunately, everybody took it, because they didn't know how to leave once they got in. Now the net was made of servers in the center and clients at the edge. Clients had rather little power and servers had quite a lot. As storage gets cheaper, as processing gets cheaper, and as complex services that scale in ways that are hard to use small computers for, or at any rate, these aggregated collections of small computers for, the most important of which is search, as services began to populate that net, the hierarchical nature of the net came to seem like it was meant to be there. The net was made of servers and clients, and the clients were the guys at the edge representing human beings, and servers were things in the middle with lots of power and lots of data. Now, one more thing happened about that time. It didn't happen in Microsoft Windows computers, although it happened in Microsoft Windows servers, and it happened more in sensible operating systems like Unix and GNU Linux and other ones. Namely, servers kept logs. That's a good thing to do. Computers ought to keep logs. It's a very wise decision when making computer operating software to keep logs. It helps with debugging, makes efficiencies attainable. makes it possible to study the actual operations of computers in the real world. It's a very good idea. But if you have a system which centralizes servers, and the servers centralize their logs, then you are creating vast repositories of hierarchically organized data about people at the edges of the network that they do not control. And unless they are experienced in the operation of servers, will not understand the comprehensiveness of, will not understand the meaningfulness of, will not understand the aggregatability of. So we build a network out of a communications architecture designed for peering, which we defined in client-server style, which we then defined to be the disempowered client at the edge and the server in the middle. We aggregated processing and storage increasingly in the middle, and we kept the logs, that is, information about the flows of information in the net, in centralized places, far from the human beings who controlled, or at any rate thought they controlled, the operation of the computers that increasingly dominated their lives. This was a recipe for disaster. This was a recipe for disaster. haven't mentioned yet the word cloud, which I was dealt on the top of the deck when I received the news that I was talking here tonight about privacy in the cloud. I haven't mentioned the word cloud because the word cloud doesn't really mean anything very much. In other words, the disaster we are having is not the catastrophe of the cloud. The disaster we are having is the catastrophe of the way we misunderstood the net under the assistance of the unfree software that helped us to understand it. What cloud means is that servers have ceased to be made of iron. Cloud means virtualization of servers has occurred. So out here in the dusty edges of the galaxy where we live, in disempowered clienthood, nothing very much has changed. As you walk inward towards the center of the galaxy, it gets more fuzzy than it used to. We resolve now halo, where we used to see actual stars, you know, servers with switches and buttons you can push and such. Instead, what has happened, of course, is that iron no longer represents a single server. Iron is merely a place where servers could be. And so cloud means servers have gained freedom. Freedom to move, freedom to dance, freedom to combine and separate and reaggregate and do all kinds of tricks. Servers have gained freedom. Clients have gained nothing. Welcome to the cloud. It's a minor modification of the recipe for disaster. It improves the operability of systems that control the clients out there who were meant to be peers in a net made of equal things. So that's the architecture of the catastrophe. If you think about it, each step in that architectural evolution away from a network made of peers to servers that serve the communication with human beings, to clients, which are programs running on heavy iron, to clients, which are the computers that people actually use in a fairly disempowered state, and servers are high concentration of powers in the net, to servers are virtual processes running in clouds of iron at the center of an increasingly hot galaxy, and the clients are out there in the dusty spiral arms. All of those decisions architecturally were made without any discussion of the social consequences long term. Part of our general difficulty in talking about the social consequences of technology during the great period of invention of the internet, done by computer scientists who weren't terribly interested in sociology, social psychology, or, with a few shining exceptions, freedom. So we got an architecture which was very subject to misuse. Indeed, it was in a way begging to be misused. And now we are getting the misuse that we set up. Because we have thinned the clients out further and further and further. In fact, we made them mobile. We put them in our pockets and we started strolling around with them. There are a lot of reasons for making clients disempowered, and there are even more reasons for disempowering the people who own the clients and who might quaintly be thought of as the people who ought to control them. If you think for just a moment how many people have an interest in disempowering the clients that are the mobile telephones, you will see what I mean. There are many overlapping rights owners, as they think of themselves, each of whom has a stake in disempowering a client at the edge of the network to prevent particular hardware from being moved from one network to another, to prevent particular hardware from playing music not bought at the great monopoly of music in the sky, to disable competing video delivery services in favor of new chips I founded myself that won't run popular video standards, good or bad. There are a lot of business models that are based around mucking with the control over client hardware and software at the edge to deprive the human being who has quaintly thought that she purchased it from actually occupying the position that capitalism says owners are always in, that is, of total control. Given the one-way nature of links in the web and other elements of the data architecture that we are now also living with, that's another talk, another time, search is not a thing that we can easily distribute. The power in the market of our friends at Google depends entirely on the fact that search is not easily distributed. It is a complex service that must be centrally organized and centrally delivered. It must crawl the web in a unilateral direction, link by link, figuring out where everything is in order to help you find it when you need it. And in order to do that, at least so far, we have not evolved good algorithmic and delivery structures for doing it in a decentralized way. So search becomes a archetypal complex service, and it draws onto itself a business model for its monetization. Advertising in the 20th century was a random activity. You threw things out and hoped they worked. Advertising in the 21st century is an exquisitely precise activity. You wait for a guy to want something, and then you send him advertisements about what he wants, and bingo, it works like magic. So, of course, on the underside of a complex service called search, there is a theoretically simple service called advertising, which, when unified to a complex service, increases its efficiency by orders of magnitude. And the increase of the efficiency of the simple service, when combined with the complex one, produces an enormous surplus revenue flow, which can be used to strengthen search even more. But that's the innocent part of the story. And we don't remain in the innocent part of the story for a variety of reasons. I won't be tedious and Marxist on a Friday night and say because the bourgeoisie is constantly engaged in destructively reinventing and improving its own activities. And I won't be moralistic on a Friday night that you can't do that and say because, you know, sin is ineradicable and human beings are fallen creatures. And greed is one of the sins we cannot avoid committing. I will just say that as a sort of ordinary social process, we don't stop at innocent. We go on, which surely is the thing you should say on a Friday night. And so we went on. Now, where we went on is really towards the discovery that all of this would be even better if you had all the logs of everything. Because once you have all the logs of everything, then every simple service is suddenly a gold mine waiting to happen. And we blew it because the architecture of the net put the logs in the wrong place. They put the logs where innocence would be tempted. They put the logs where the fallen state of human beings implies eventually bad trouble. And we got it. The cloud means that we can't even point in the direction of the server anymore. And because we can't even point in the direction of the server anymore, we don't have extra technical or non-technical means of reliable control over this disaster in slow motion. You can make a rule about logs or data flow or preservation or control or access or disclosure, but your laws are human laws and they occupy particular territory, and the server is in the cloud. And that means the server is always one step ahead of any rule you make, or two, or three, or six, or poof, I just realized I'm subject to regulation. I think I'll move to Oceania now. Which means that, in effect, we lost the ability to use either legal regulation or anything about the physical architecture of the network to interfere with the process of falling away from innocence that was now inevitable in the stage I'm talking about, what we might call late Google stage one. It is here, of course, that Mr. Zuckerberg enters. The human race has, a susceptibility to harm. But Mr. Zuckerberg has attained an unenviable record. He has done more harm to the human race than anybody else his age. Right? Because he harnessed, Friday night, that is, everybody needs to get laid, and he turned it into a structure for degenerating the integrity of human personality. And he has, to a remarkable extent, succeeded with a very poor deal. Namely, I will give you free web hosting and some PHP doodads, and you get spying for free all the time. And it works. Right? That's the sad part. It works. How could that have happened? There was no architectural reason, really, right? There was no architectural reason, really. Facebook is the web with I keep all the logs. How do you feel about that? It's a terrarium for what it feels like to live in a panopticon built out of web parts. people who are investing in the new enterprises of unfreedom are also the people you will hear if you hang out in Silicon Valley these days telling you that open source has become irrelevant. What's their logic? Their logic is software as a service is becoming the way of the world. Since nobody ever gets any software anymore, the licenses that say if you give people software, you have to give them freedom don't matter because you're not giving anybody software, you're only giving them services. Well, that's right. Open source doesn't matter anymore. Free software matters a lot. Because, of course, free software is open source software with freedom. And Stallman was right. It's the freedom that matters. Okay, the rest of it is just source code. Freedom still matters. And what we need to do is to make free software matter to the problem that we have, which is unfree services delivered in unfree ways really beginning to deteriorate the structure of human freedom. Like a lot of unfreedom, the real underlying social process that forces this unfreedom along is nothing more than perceived convenience. All sorts of freedom goes over perceived convenience. You know this, you've stopped paying for things with cash. You use a card, you can wave at a RFID reader. Thank you. web server you can put in your pocket and plug in any place. In other words, it shouldn't be any larger than the charger for your cell phone. And you should be able to plug it into any power jack in the world, into any wire near it, or sync it up to any Wi-Fi router that happens to be in its neighborhood. It should have a couple of USB ports that attach it to things. It should know how to bring itself up. It should know how to start its web server. It should know how to go and collect your stuff out of all the social networking places where you've got it. It should know how to send an encrypted backup of everything to the your friends' servers. It should know how to microblog. It should know how to make some noise that's like tweet, but not gonna infringe anybody's trademark. In other words, it should know how to be your, avatar. In a free net that works for you and keeps the logs. You can always tell what's happening in your server, and if anybody else wants to know what's happening in your server, they can get a search warrant. architect services in the net. We need to redistribute services back towards the edge. We need to devirtualize the servers where your life is stored, and we need to restore some autonomy to you as the owner of the server. The measures for taking those steps are technical. As usual, the box builders are ahead of us. The hardware isn't the constraint. As usual, nowadays, the software isn't really that deep a constraint either, because we've made so much wonderful software, which is in fact being used by all the guys on the bad architecture. They don't want to do without our stuff. The bad architecture is enabled, powered by us. The re-architecture is too. And we have our usual magic benefit. If we had one copy of what I'm talking about, we'd have all the copies we need. We have no manufacturing or transport or logistics constraint. If we do the job, it's done. We scale. This is a technical challenge for a social reason. It's a frontier for technical people to explore. There is enormous social payoff for exploring it. The payoff is plain because the harm being ameliorated is current, and people you know are suffering from it. Everything we know about why we make free software says that's when we come into our own. It's a technical challenge, incrementally attainable by extension from where we already are, that makes the lives of the people around us and whom we care about immediately better. I have never, in 25 years of doing this work, I have never seen us fail to rise to a challenge that could be defined in those terms. So I don't think we're going to fail this one either. I used to say to my students, how many video cameras are there between where you live and the law school? Count them. I now say to my students, how many video cameras are there between the front door of the law school and this classroom? Count them. I now say to my students, can you find a place where there are no video cameras? Now, what happened in that process was that we created immense cognitive auxiliaries for the state. Enormous engines of listening. You know how it is if you live in an American university, thanks to the movie and music companies, which keep reminding you of the consequences of living in the midst of an enormous surveillance network. We're surrounded by stuff listening to and watching us. We're surrounded by mineable data. Not all of that's going to go away because we took Facebook and split it up and carried away our little shards of it. It's not going to go away because we won't take free web hosting with spying inside anymore. We'll have other work to do. And some of that work is lawyers' work. I will admit that. Some of that work is law drafting and litigating and making trouble and doing lawyer stuff. And that's fine. Ready. My friends and I will do the lawyer's work. It would be way simpler to do the lawyer's work if we were living in a society which had come to understand its privacy better. It would be way simpler to do the lawyer's work if young people realized that when they grow up and start voting now that they're grown up, this is an issue. That they need to get the rest of it done the way we fixed the big stuff when we were kids. We'll have a much easier time with the enormous confusions of international interlocking of regimes when we have deteriorated the immense force of American capitalism in forcing us to be less free and more surveilled for other people's profit all the time. It isn't that this gets all the problems solved. But the easy work is very rich and rewarding right now. The problems are really bad. Getting the easy ones out will improve the politics for solving the hard ones. And it's right up our alley. The solution is made of our parts. We got to do it. That's my message. It's Friday night. Some people don't want to go right back to coding, I'm sure. We could put it off until Tuesday. But how long do you really want to wait? How long do you really want to wait? You know, every day that goes by, there's more data we'll never get back. Every day that goes by, there's more inferences we can't undo. Every day that goes by, we pile up more stuff in the hands of the people who got too much. So it's not like we should just sort of say, one of these days I'll get around to that. It's not like we should say, you know, I think I'd rather sort of spend my time browsing news about iPad. It's way more urgent than that. It's way more urgent than that. It's that we haven't given ourselves the direction in which to go. So let's give ourselves the direction in which to go. The direction in which to go is towards freedom, using free software to make social justice.
Yeah. Okay.